Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The court is now in session. The judges are Judge Ross, Judge Riley, Judge Gaitas, the Honorable Theodora Gaitas presiding.
Thank you and good morning and welcome again to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today we are having our calendar via the Zoom platform. The date is September 15th, 2021. I'm jumping ahead a year. There are four cases scheduled for oral argument this morning. We will jump right in to our first case. That case is in the matter of the welfare of the child of JSS and DMP parents. The case number is A210412. And I see that we have both counsel with us. They look ready to go. I just have a few remarks before we begin with your arguments, counsel. Today's session is being audio recorded and the oral argument will be available a little later on the court's website. If we have any glitches with our technology this morning, if we lose someone, we will pause the session and wait a reasonable amount of time until everyone can be with us again. And at that point, we will resume the session. As you can see, the time is displayed on a little screen here this morning. Each counsel shall have 15 minutes to present their argument, and that timer will count you down. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. And that is a standard 5 minutes. You don't have to reserve any time. Finally, I would just ask that you identify yourself and the party you are representing before you begin your argument. And just a general comment to everyone who may be watching the argument, please do make sure that you're on mute while the attorneys are arguing. And with that, I think we're ready to begin, and I will turn things over to counsel for the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Carlson, and I represent appellant father DMP. We are asking that this court would reverse the Otter Tail County District Court's order terminating my client's parental rights. We are asking that this court would remand with instructions to facilitate a realistic case plan, an explicit case plan identifying the issues that Otter Tail County wants father to correct, and that father would have a reasonable amount of time to address those issues. To me, this case is about a moving target that was given to father. The child was removed in February due to the fact that she was placed with a mother and the mother had previously had parental rights terminated, and based on previous terminations of parental rights, she was presumed to be unfit to parent. The father was not in the home at the time, but father was responsible for the child being placed with the mother at the outset of the case.
I just want to make sure, because there had been an involuntary transfer of legal custody from mother to father, right? And so you're talking about this when father had legal custody of the child. I just want to make sure I'm clear on the timeline here.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I am talking about the events that occurred in February of 2020. The court is correct that prior to that, I believe in 2018, the Swift County District Court issued an order transferring physical and legal custody of child to father, and that was based on the fact that at that time, father had demonstrated compliance with the expectations that were laid out for him by Swift County. What presents in this case is whether or not at the time there was that transfer of physical and legal custody, there was a clear explanation to father of what the expectations were regarding to what degree mother is allowed to have contact with the father, or rather, mother is allowed to have contact with the child. legally, father does have, as the sole physical and legal custodian, he does have the discretion to allow some contact between mother and child. He's able to do that. However, in this case, I understand that he was out of town at the time that the child was removed, and at the time of the child's removal, Otter Tail County had some concerns about the child being placed, or at least being in the care, the temporary care, it seems, of the mother, and mother's sister was also present.
So, well, Ms. Carlson, Ms. Carlson, I am wondering what exactly the record tells us about what father was told at the time of the transfer of legal custody regarding contact with mother.
And Your Honor, that is not something that is made clear to me on this record. And I will tell this court that I'm familiar with the Otter Tail County record, but that the Swift County record, I reviewed the fact that there was an order transferring physical and legal custody to father. That order would not have been issued had father not demonstrated some compliance with the expectations of Swift County. What I will say is that in this case, based on the record before this court, Otter Tail County, based on my reading of this record, did not provide services or indications to father other than some prodding and conversations with a social worker that would indicate to him the need to prevent child from having contact with mother. And on this record, I don't know that preventing child from having contact with mother wasn't something that was necessarily a requirement. It would seem that mother should be able to have some sort of supervised contact with the child, and that father would have the discretion to be able to facilitate that supervised contact. But
well, it's my understanding that the reason that this came to the attention of the department or the agency is that the child, who was five at the time, along with her three-year-old cousin, it was February, 10 degrees outside, were wandering around, not in winter clothes and by themselves. And the authorities found them. Right?
Correct.
And so the child, and when they finally figured out where the children belonged, they took them there, and it was mother and her sister who were there. Father wasn't there. Mother's sister is a predatory offender. And then when they did a follicle test on the child's hair, there was cocaine. It was revealed, lots of it. So that wasn't father supervising visitation with mother.
The court is absolutely correct about what the events were that led up to the adjudication. What I'm concerned about is that following adjudication, what services were given to the father? I'm not challenging the fact that there was an adjudication and that there were some bad facts that led to that adjudication. However, if the agency's overarching concern, if its number one concern is that father allows child to have contact with mother, there should be some services that are addressed or provided, or at least some meaningful conversations with father that would allow him to have a better understanding of the agency's position. Now, that happened in February, and by the time the case went to trial, father was insistent of the fact that he and mother were no longer in a relationship. And that he was willing to prevent the child from having contact with the mother unless the child's therapist was in agreement, that he was willing to do all the things that we would have asked him to do. But by the time the case gets to trial, suddenly the issue is no longer the fact that father allowed this unsupervised contact with the mother to happen. Suddenly the issue is that father is unemployed, or father doesn't have stable housing that he has demonstrated, which he did have housing throughout the duration of the case. Father didn't provide a hair follicle test, even though he complied with chemical dependency treatment. The person at the chemical dependency center didn't adequately communicate with a social worker in Otter Tail County. It was a moving target where the reason the child was removed, I'd be willing to concede that, yeah, chemical use was an issue at the time of removal and that the child's hair follicle test came back positive. But then you gave father a year, you gave him some explicit, the case plan is a directive document that is supposed to tell a parent what it is that they need to correct to have the child return to their care. And to figure out what it is that a parent needs to correct to have the child return to their care, whatever those issues should not be changing throughout the year. However, if they are changing throughout the year, if the agency is coming to find that there are new concerns that arise, there's a way of modifying the case plan. And that isn't to, at every hearing, figure out some way that isn't in the plain letter of the case plan that we could argue that father has not complied, demonstrating functional stability. I don't know what that, I mean, the county is arguing that father doesn't demonstrate functional stability as evidenced by the fact that the parenting assessor in her recommendations thought that he should address his employment and housing. Well, the agency is under a statutory mandate to provide services that would remedy the conditions that led to out-of-home placement. And the agency is under a statutory requirement of giving that parent adequate notice of what those conditions are.
I was going to ask you to clarify part of your argument. Part of it deals with father's housing situation. And you say that nothing indicates that father needs to demonstrate stable housing. So I have two questions there. The first one is, do you think it's important as part of the statutory framework that a parent provide housing for their children? I don't know if you think unstable housing is okay, meets that requirement. I just wasn't clear with what you meant by that in your brief. And then secondly, you argue that the record indicates that father owned a home in Pelican Rapids, and that seemed like a real moving target when I was reading through the record. I couldn't figure out where that came from when there were other conflicting statements in the record.
I don't know what the conflicting statements were in the record, but my understanding is that he had to travel to the Twin Cities to address his chemical use and that the treatment center that he chose to go to is in the Twin Cities.
I don't know in the record where it shows that he owned a house in Pelican Rapids.
I'd be happy to look for that while the respondent is going through the record, but that was what I got from the record, is that he owned the home in Pelican Rapids throughout. And in answer to your initial question, which had to do with stable housing, homelessness is not always an issue in child protection. I'm not by any means saying that it's not better to have stable housing, but the standard is not, can the child have a more luxurious life with another parent? The standard is grave and weighty. That's the reason that you would terminate parental rights. And homelessness in and of itself is not a reason to terminate parental rights.
Can I turn your attention to the case plan on that subject? It's a little bit fuzzy as to whether or not he's being required to have stable housing. If I look at the first initiative in the case plan, I see that father will need to ensure that he's not residing with mother. It does seem to be the overarching concern. But the next sentence says, if father needs assistance to locate housing, he should sign a release for Otter Tail County to Human Services to assist. So I want you to focus on that and address how that bears on your argument that the case plan doesn't require housing or doesn't refer to housing.
Oh, the case plan refers to housing explicitly in the sense that it says that father and mother are not to live together. That's what the case plan says. And the expectation here is that father should read between the lines and realize that what the agency really means is that we want to see a mortgage or something to that effect. I mean, I'm not really sure what the agency wants because when I read the plain letter of the case plan, he didn't live with the mother. That is what the agency told him to do. They said, don't live with the mother. And then he didn't live with the mother. And that, based on this record, continued throughout the case. He had contact with mother during the year. The child was not with him. He did not expose the child to the mother during the year, but he did not continue to reside with the mother. And if the agency has an expectation that a father is going to demonstrate stable housing, it doesn't simply fall on father to sign releases to get housing. You know, it's a two-way street when it comes to reasonable efforts.
Now, the case plan does refer to abstaining from non-prescribed mood-altering substances. And the district court makes the point that the court itself had ordered hair follicle testing that the father didn't comply with. And I was sort of fuzzy in the record as to the extent of those orders from the district court. And so I'd like you to maybe clarify the record in that regard and respond to the concern that the district court raised about him relying upon the UAs that rather than the hair follicle test to establish that he was not using drugs at the time of the trial.
Sure. The district court gave a lot of weight to the fact that apparently on three occasions, the district court asked the father to comply with hair follicle testing, and two of those occasions were prior to the adjudication. Though it's not properly before this court, a hair follicle test or a chemical use test, it is a search. And it's not a search that's incident to arrest or that there's implied consent for based on the fact that you have a child that's alive in the state of Minnesota. So the reason you need that adjudication is to give the court the authority to actually order a parent to comply with chemical testing and or chemical treatment. You aren't able to do it prior to that. However, my concern in this case is that father did go to treatment. So where it gets fuzzy is, father goes to treatment. The reports are that he's doing well in treatment. He apparently does chemical testing and treatment. And then there's an argument that the social worker did not have good communication with the person at the treatment center and that the social worker didn't follow up on determining whether or not the treatment center verified the testing with a laboratory. These are not... The burden is not on father to make sure that the social worker is doing his job and that the treatment center is assisting the social worker. Father is given an explicit case plan that says comply with chemical testing. May I finish my point here, please?
Yes, you may wrap up.
Thank you. Father is given an explicit case plan, and clearly the issue that the district court is asking father to address is chemical use. The issue is not... compliance with hair follicle testing, although I understand that that was one of the ways that his use could have been addressed. He addressed his use by going to treatment. The reports from the treatment center is that he successfully graduated from treatment. And if the social worker needed more information than that, than what the social worker got, it seems that the social worker could have done more than just left it at that, including probably updating the case plan to indicate that for whatever reason, in the social worker's mind, the most important thing was that there be hair follicle test results instead of urine analysis that the parent would have given in the treatment center. So briefly, the parent is entitled to notice. That notice should come in the form of a case plan. That notice should be what the issues are that the agency wants the parent to correct. And if those issues change throughout the year, then the case plan should go through the statutorily required ways of modifying the case plan, which is not coming up with modifications on the bench in hoping that the parent understands what those modifications are, whether or not they were involved in the case plan drafting or not. Thank you for
okay.
your time.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. And you will have 5 minutes to respond during a rebuttal argument. Thank you for your argument. Next, we will hear from Ms. Schor. You will have 15 minutes and you may begin.
Thank you. My name is Kathleen Schor. I go by Katie Schor, and I'm representing the Otter Tail County Department of Human Services, who I'll refer to as the agency, as that's our common practice. May it please the court. Opposing counsel is entirely right in that this was a moving target case. Father was the moving target. The main thing that the court is looking for, in as far as parental engagement and services and compliance is communication with the agency. And that is something that absolutely did not occur with father in this case. Throughout the record, you can see that the agency reached out to father. Father would move the target. First, he was in Pelican. He was at a different address than is indicated to the court. Then he was in Minneapolis. Then he was back in Pelican. And it's entirely understandable how the court is confused as to whether he had a residence in Pelican. I'm sorry, Jeff.
So what? Is there something in the case plan that suggests he's not allowed to move his residence?
Absolutely not. But
so
the problem
is, concerned about it?
With the agency's ability to assist him in setting up services, the agency needs to know where he is in order to make those services available to him and within his area. And that was the big problem with setting up services in the very beginning, is father would never confirm where he wanted those services set up or where he wanted to do visitation, where he wanted to do CD treatment. And
well, I'm looking at the case plan. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to find where those concerns arise. And let me just mention some trouble I've got with the district court's analysis, and you can press back if you think my concerns are misplaced. So the district court raises some concern about the fact, implicit concern, it seemed to me, that he was in this turning point, which is his own choosing. But the case plan itself says that father will continue to follow the recommendations of Turning Point. So the case plan itself recognizes that Turning Point is where he's getting this treatment. So, and it seems to me that the evidence from the treatment facility was that he was a success. And I was confused by the district court's fact finding here. The district court says was concerned about whether there was a lab report to confirm the test results. And the concern of the district court was that, I guess the social worker was concerned that even though Turning Point says that someone observed him providing the sample, the district court says there is a question. I don't know what that means. There is a question whether appropriate protocol for observation of tests was followed, because the district court says we don't know what the temperature of the urine sample was. We don't know whether there was protein. In other words, implicit in the district court's analysis was somehow the father may have tricked all of these tests in indicating that he was really providing a urine sample, and maybe it was water or something. But how does that rise to clear and convincing evidence? The district court's, the social worker's concern that there might not be an adequate test, and there's no evidence to suggest that the test was false. So how does that rise to clear and convincing evidence, and how is it the father's responsibility for there to be any laboratory testing?
And Judge, respectfully, I think it comes down to going back to that communication with the agency. Now, as you can see throughout the record, that the agency did reach out to Turning
Point. Well, hold on. I'm not talking about communication here. I'm talking about the district court implicitly concluding, it seems to me, that father's urine tests, which provided a negative result for drugs, are not reliable. So we usually defer to the district court in matters of credibility, but on what basis would the district court either reject the tests as being unreliable or implicitly put on the father the burden to make sure that all of these tests that he's given were lab tested after the test results indicated that they appeared to be negative? Why is it father's responsibility?
And we did hear testimony at trial from the person that was administering the test, and that was essentially the caseworker for father at Turning Point. And there was specific questions about how those tests were conducted and the reliability of those DIP tests themselves. And the response from the individual who was testifying was that he didn't know. It said on the box that they were reliable, and so he believed them to be reliable tests. There was also testimony about how the test was administered, whether it was observed, whether these other measures were taken in order to ensure the reliability. And the judge found that none of these things were done.
No,
and so
the judge said there is a question as to whether appropriate protocol for observation of tests was followed. That's what the finding was. So what is the evidence for the district court to reach the conclusion that you're suggesting the district court reach, which was that the tests weren't observed. What's the evidence of that?
And Judge, there was testimony at trial with regard to that.
Right. So what was the testimony at trial that would justify the district court in either rejecting the tests as being not appropriately observed or rejecting the test as not having been lab tested after the initial test results are show negative?
And from the agency's perspective, and the argument that the agency made on the record was that even in reviewing these test results, which the court admitted not as evidence, but as the fact that the agency, that these tests were in fact taken, there was a question to their reliability because not all of them were signed. Some of the boxes were not checked. It seemed like there was a bit of carelessness from the agency's perspective as to how these forms were filled out and who was actually filling them out. Additionally, with the observation of the test, there was testimony taken about how these tests were observed, and it was unclear that whether he was actually watching DM when he was actually providing the urine sample for these tests.
Okay, so what is the evidence that is clear and convincing to help the district court, or to help us believe that there is a basis for the district court to make the finding that you're suggesting the district court implicitly made, which was that this really wasn't his urine. It must have been something else. And this really wasn't a negative test result because the lab would have come up with a different conclusion. What's the evidence of that? And do you believe that evidence is really clear and convincing?
And Judge, I can only presume that the court looked at the cumulative evidence that came in through trial, through the testimony, as well as the question about the lab results and that evidence, and DMP's refusal to engage with the hair follicle test that the judge ordered, with the judge then having questions about what was actually happening and whether DMP was actually complying with maintaining sobriety.
Okay, where in the case plan do we find this hair follicle requirement? It looks to me that he has to be compliant with Turning Point's directives, and the record seems to suggest rather unvaryingly that he did comply with Turning Point. So on what basis would the district court terminate parental rights in father's choosing to follow the case plan and not a reference the district court made to a hair follicle test?
And Judge, the case plan does indicate that random testing does need to be complied with, and it does indicate just random and ongoing drug testing. Now, the court, I think the argument that opposing counsel was making was that the court somehow doesn't have the authority to order something outside the case plan. And the respondent's response to that is, I think the court has that direct authority to do that. In addition, as far as having separate hearings or giving DMP a chance to engage and negotiate terms of an out-of-home placement plan, as the court can see, there wasn't a signature in the original case plan until November of 2020. DMP just simply wasn't engaging or communicating at all, including with
the town. I don't know if this helps your point. So mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is opposing counsel correct that the court requested or directed hair follicle testing once after the case plan and twice before the case plan?
Once before the case plan, Judge, and twice after.
Okay. And so
once was done I'm sorry, Judge.
No, go ahead.
Once was done immediately at the EPC and confirmed at the admit-deny hearing. So that would have been prior to adjudication. The other two times were explicitly when the judge indicated that he wasn't going to allow unsupervised visitation to occur or to begin unless the guardian ad litem was able to actually see DMP with a child and observe a visit, and the hair follicle tests were complied with. And those were the two other times.
I'm still at a loss for how the district court would. I mean, I understand the district court's frustration with father's failure to comply with the directive, but I'm at a loss for how the district court would deem clear and convincing the evidence that father is in fact using drugs. I don't know how that is clear in the record, and I'm not sure that your answer satisfies me that there is in fact clear and convincing evidence that he is using mood altering substances. This goes, and this, by the way, other than the child's positive hair follicle test, I didn't see any reference in the district court making a nexus to father's alleged ongoing drug use, which I think is very faintly proved, if at all, to his care for the child. There has to be a nexus connection.
And I certainly agree, Judge. The only thing I can say is that the judge did take judicial notice of the prior order from Swift County, as well as there was a number of case notes that were admitted into evidence from that Swift County case by the respondent themselves. And that Swift County case did focus a lot on chemical dependency use by father and mother both. Now, there are some allegations that father complied with that plan, but the judge did take judicial notice of that case as well. And as you can see, there was a very, what I would consider, limited compliance before they were at the 180 day, very close to that timeline.
Can I press you on one other concern that was a theme in the district court's analysis? The district court said on a number of occasions, well, the change of heart came too late. And the change of heart was with regard to contact with mom. And I see in the case plan that there's no indication that he has to not contact mom or not expose the child to mom, but just that he can't reside with her. So there doesn't seem to be any evidence that he was residing with her, at least not clear and convincing evidence that he was residing with her. And what troubles me is that repeatedly this court and the Supreme Court has said that what matters isn't what's going on before the case plan or even during the case plan. What are the facts at the time of the trial? And the district court on a number of occasions said, with regard to a number of things, well, his change of, and I'm quoting here, his change of heart came too late. Mm-hmm. Well, how is it too late if it's a fact that occurs during the trial, that it's clear that finally the light bulb comes on? How can the district court justifiably terminate parental rights based upon circumstances that have changed during the trial?
And Judge, the district court judge didn't find that testimony to be credible. It very directly says that the things that DMP is testifying about, that they now have a residence that's been unclear throughout the case, that they're not having any contact with mother. And going directly to that point, since I see I'm short on time, is I don't think the issue so much is whether DMP had contact with mother, but their failure to recognize the threat to the child and ability to just protect the child from mother.
Okay, so could you point us in the case plan to that concern?
And Judge, with regard to that, it does talk about how he needs to not be residing with her and make sure that... I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe there was
something. I have it in front of me. It says, yep. Father will need to ensure that he is not residing with mother. Besides that language, is there anything in the case plan that would have directed father that he needs to restrict mother from seeing the child or that he needs to end his relationship with mother?
And Judge, DMP didn't have custody of the child even throughout the case or even moved to unsupervised visits. So I don't know that he would have had access to have contact with the child and mother at that time.
No, I'm just asking whether there's anything in the case plan beyond that simple reference that he's not supposed to reside with her. Is there anything in the case plan that would have informed him that the concerns that were later raised as a basis for termination of parental rights were something he needed to be vigilant about?
No, Judge, I don't believe there was anything in the case plan, but I also believe, and if I could just finish on this.
You can go ahead and finish your thought.
I do believe you can see from the prior orders that the court took judicial notice of, as well as the temperament of the testimony throughout the trial, that the court, as well as the agency, was very frustrated that DMP refused to engage in any communication whatsoever with regard to mother, her engagement in the case plan, or any relationship between DMP and mother, or the mother and the child. And communication was a big factor in that, refusing to discuss any of that, the agency is very limited in providing any services to address that need when there is a refusal to have any communication or discuss that topic at all. And I think the court, district court themselves, throughout their intermediate disposition hearing orders, voiced that concern as well. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your argument, Ms. Scher. And now we will go back to Ms. Carlson. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. For the record, this is Ann Carlson. I represent the appellant father, DMP. Judge Riley, I did have an opportunity to review the record and found that it was in trial transcript 155 that the social worker testified to the fact that it was his understanding that a residence was maintained in Pelican Rapids throughout the duration of the case. And that conforms with my understanding of reading the roughly 700-page trial transcript here.
Excuse me, could you give me that page number again? And thank you for finding it.
Of course, that is on page 155 of the trial transcript.
Thank you.
The agency is arguing that father had some affirmative duty to have... This is a struggle for me. The father had some affirmative duty to basically work mother's case plan on her behalf. That father was to have conversations with the social worker that would either indicate that father was against the mother, or that father could speak for the mother's decisions, or use the social worker as a mental health professional in addressing, you know, whether or not this was a relationship that father should continue. Father is not required to indulge the social worker with his romantic relationships, and nothing in the case plan would indicate that father needs to make sure that the social worker has a thorough understanding of what the nature of the relationship between the mother and the child, or rather the mother and the father, is. And this frustration, I read father's frustration in the transcripts with not wanting to answer questions about mother's compliance with the case plan, because that is not father's responsibility. Father complied with his case plan. Father demonstrated that he wanted to reunify with the child.
So Ms. Carlson, it seems the court ordered case plan was assistance for housing for him, if he wanted it, to follow the recommendations of the CD eval, which he did through Turning Point, and then to follow the recommendations from the parental capacity assessment. That was part of the case plan. And then there are other case management services and attend all visits. Do you agree? I'm looking at the court's order at the bottom of page 3, paragraph 15. And so that seems to be his case plan. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Would I agree that his case plan requires him to follow, in addition to the case plan, follow the recommendations of the chemical use assessment, as well as follow the recommendations of the parenting assessment?
Yes. Okay, so then if you flip over to page 8 of the judge's order, he talks about what Dr. Shara, who did the parenting assessment, recommended. And one of her recommendations was that reunification appears to be appropriate if father is willing to commit to no contact between child and mother. If he is unwilling to make that commitment, then alternative placement options will need to be explored. And then she talks about safety of self and others with regard to mother there. Tell me how the record supports that father followed that recommendation of the parenting assessment.
Well, frankly, on this record, based on what the court just read to me, it seems the parenting assessor did more to reunify the family than the agency did in this case. I mean, the parenting assessor outlined what would be beneficial for this family, including the fact that father was to explain, or I think that the parenting assessor actually used the phrase that father was to provide clear and convincing evidence or something to that effect that he was not going to allow mother to be around the child. The case plan asks for him to complete a parenting assessment, which he did. And the statements here to me are somewhat vague about how to comply with the requirements of the parenting assessment. However, I would think based on the fact that he substantially complied with the case plan that was given to him by Otter Tail County, that the correct thing to do would be, after you get this parenting assessment, figure out what services can be offered by the agency that would assist him in following through with the recommendations of the parenting assessment. I'm just not seeing that reasonable efforts were made in this case. To me, it seems like a case where, just a brief moment to finish, to me, it seems like a case where as soon as father completed elements of the case plan, in every way that can be thought of, the ways that he completed these elements was unsatisfactory to the agency, and they had to really kind of dig in the record to find ways that he was not satisfactorily complying with the case plan. I am asking that this court would reverse the district court's order based on the fact that it is not supported by sufficient evidence that would allow a termination of parental rights pursuant to any of the three statutory bases pled. I am asking that this court would remand with instructions to provide father with a case plan that explicitly states what it is that he needs to do to have the child returned to his care. Thank you.
Okay, thank you both for your arguments this morning. The matter is now submitted.